sweat the technique. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at St. Arnold Brewing Company. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jeremy Branham has got his picket sign as he's pacing outside of wherever he is on the University of Houston campus because
our
he is
Cougs.
Protesting the shadiness of one Tremac, Brian McDonald, even though we did win.
You did 3-2.
And the fact that he implemented a producer.
I did not.
Into the contest, which is illegal.
So we.
To get the rules.
We have gone to the tape. You guys are accusing me of reading a part, a quote, in which I included something Sean said. But there are. No, I guess I'm messing up the phrasing. What exactly am I being
This
accused?
Is not going to go well with the jury. They're already questioning your delivery and the fact that you are guilty as charged, sir.
No, I mean, you know, I have the tape, so I spoiler alert, I am not guilty.
You said we went to the tape. You went to the tape. You could alter the tape if you had to.
I mean, you can verify it next time you're up here. I can't alter what comes from the what we pull the podcast on. But basically, you're accusing me of not including something Sean said in the quote.
No, we're saying that you read audio that Sean actually provided
okay,
in the clip.
Sorry, I don't know why I struggled phrasing
next
that.
Next time you'll have to approach the bench, sir, because yeah. I'm telling you.
All right, so are we ready to hear? Now, in the interest of time, I started this halfway through so we don't have to play both clips.
Time, shmime, whatever.
But I'm starting it from where Dell says, get over it. So first you will hear what I said, and then you will hear the clip that we played afterwards. First clip. Get over it. Two World Series titles, get over it. The 17 and 22 rings, both. Put one on each hand, kiss. Kiss them both.
Get over it. Two World Series titles.
Yeah.
Get over
kiss
it.
Kiss the ring.
The 17 and 22 rings, both. Put one on each hand, kiss them both.
There we go. Vindication.
I don't think so. The confusion
what do you mean?
Is there.
You have
look,
ears?
From a juror perspective, we also heard Sean utter the same exact script that you read from.
No, I question your listening ability. I didn't say kiss the
you
ring.
You
want to
try and listen at St. Arnold's with a full house? I'm just in a train?
Well, that's my.
I mean, I don't care what Dykens got up on their tracks, but the bad boy that runs through here is loud.
Okay. Well, do you need to hear it again? Because it's not going to change.
No, because I think that what else isn't going to change is the fact that we hung that dub. And as long as
we
hung
win.
The dub.
You did win.
Yeah, since we won, I don't have to file a protest
okay.
and have the game replayed.
See, now I feel like that's you admitting it that I was right without having
no, I'm
to admit
not
that
even
I was
close.
Right.
No, I just don't want to bore the listener with more of our courtroom diatribe.
Again, that is admitting I am right without admitting that I am
it's
right.
Not true. Okay, Mr. Rapstar, do you want to try and explain your case again so that you can do the wiki stop and go and figure out what you said?
I don't have
and then
to explain
I actually
it. I
had
just
to help you.
The audio.
In a court of law, I wouldn't have helped you and corrected you to get the point across you were trying to make.
I don't even need to make the case. The audio makes the case for me. In the clip that I read, I don't say kiss the rings in the middle.
Where
Sean says kiss the rings.
The Hive becomes the jury. Hive, who's right, who's wrong? Let him have it. 713-780-3776. You know how to reach us on Twitch and on Twitter and all different outlets. We'd love to hear what you think.
In his underwear, living in his mother's basement.
Look out for reading these.
Yeah, no, my botched delivery at the beginning is probably not going to play in my favor.
Philip, who was just here a while ago, just already on Twitch. I'm on Joel and Jeremy's side on this one. Well, Joel's side, because Jeremy snuck out. No, he didn't sneak out. He walked out in protest.
I'm really saddened to hear that our listeners don't have ears. That we are an audio medium.
Huh. Well, we'll see how that's how you perceive it. Let's see how the jury perceives it, because this one's up for interpretation, and there's plenty to interpret here. And if we want to go to the tape, your presentation sucked.
Well, you want to hear them again? They're not
no,
that
I
long.
Don't want to hear it again. I would like to. No, I'm talking about the fact that when you tried to explain what actually happened, you weren't even close.
Okay. I flubbed a few words, but it doesn't change what the audio says.
The verdict is in. Guilty as charged.
No,
Troy.
It's not.
That's what Troy says. I'm just reading it right from the text line. I'm trying to do you a favor. Stay off the Twitch line.
Oh, yeah, Twitch hates me. I don't care.
Oh, there's a couple here that are spam. It says Brian's right. That's definitely not something that's accurate. I don't know where that came from.
Should we move on to Jalen Petrie?
Yes, let's revisit the top story in Houston today because no one played last night. By the way, Jeremy did step out. Brian and I will take you till 6 o'clock here on the Killer Bees, live from St. Arnold Brewery. Phenomenal night with a home game right down the street. Great place to hang out, big screen TV outside, lots of beer specials, all the different kinds of beers that you love. There's got to be a flavor here that's right. Come out and see us till 6 o'clock. The prize wheel is here. And, oh, by the way, if you want a prize in our bracket challenge, you can pick it up here tonight with Victoria up until 6 o'clock, so you can come see her as well. Big news of the day, Jalen Petrie, 3-year, $39 million extension. We opened the show with some of this. Curious to get more of your thoughts, Brian, because the first time around, obviously, we had a lot to say about the fact that, look, Jalen Petrie's a guy that hometown kid, Baylor product, had a great rookie year that everybody was very excited about. Since then, it's been hot and cold, good and bad, roller coaster, if you will. But now suddenly, a year before his contract expires, here comes this big deal for your nickel corner?
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of discourse for the people that are, like, defending the deal because you, Jeremy, and I were all pretty universal. I mean, not that the deal kills the Texans. It's not, you know, obviously, like a $100 million deal. It's, you know, $33 million added on to his contract. But I've seen people in defense of paying him the top nickel corner money in the league when he can't cover make the defense of, well, he can also play safety. Well, I mean, I guess technically true, he can line up at safety and be listed on paper as safety, but the reason he's playing nickel corner is because his second year, you mentioned the up and down nature of his career so far, his second year was terrible, and the Texans thought and showed so with their actions that he can't play safety. Like, he was a disaster in year two as a safety, so they moved him to nickel corner so they could he could be close to the line, basically kind of play a linebacker position in their sub packages. And it works, but I mean, we still see the same problems with his coverage ability. Second half of the Lions game really stands out, where he couldn't cover anybody on a crossing route when he's in man coverage. Same thing against the Colts; they abused him a few times on that. So I just have a fundamental problem of paying guy literally the highest amount of money at the position when he can't do something that's vital to the position, which is cover.
And Brian, you bring up a great point in the fact that it's one thing to analyze this when I first heard it and say, wow, that's a lot of money that I never thought that they were going to be willing, nor do I think that he was worth paying. But then when you start looking at that he becomes the highest paid nickel corner in the game, now I'm really scratching my temple questioning, going, what the hell are you doing? Like, again, it's a tale of the multiple facets of the position. There's no question that most everybody that analyzes talent says when he goes and gets up into the box, when he gets into the backfield, he is disruptive, he is a big hitter, he is capable of doing a lot of things that are really, really good for a defense. But when you watch him in coverage, the routes he takes, the fact that everybody can blow his doors off, the fact that even when he was a safety, he was getting beat deep, his coverage is less than. That doesn't translate to me in any way, shape, or form and says he should be the top paid nickel corner in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be a question of what traits do you value most at that position. And clearly the Texans value his tackling and his ability to hit hard and be a thumper there at that position. But, I mean, he's a nickel corner. I mean, half the time, if not more, his job is going to be covering slot receivers, you know, cutting across the field, trying to shake them and get open. And he's proven to be, best case, a below-average guy in man coverage. And we saw that constantly in that position, that when teams kind of identified, well, there's our weak spot. We know we can't test Stingley. We know we can't test Lassiter, especially, you know, middle part of the season when Lassiter had proven himself. Where they tested the Texans secondary was testing, Jalen Petrie in the slot, yep, trying to cover guys crossing the field, and he proved time and time again that he couldn't do it. So I value his spot on the roster. I thought him being basically a sub-package linebacker disguised as a defensive back was playing to his best strength. But just because you played to his best strength doesn't mean you should pay the guy top of the market.
See, that again, when you look at it too, whether it's a tight end or it's – and there's a lot of obviously premier tight ends and tight ends on teams that you're trying to, you know, get better than in the AFC. But even slot receivers are a massive problem for Jalen Petrie. And you're right, it's the middle of the field. But then as they expand the routes and they run the outs and they run some different kinds of posts off of that, he gets cooked and he gets beat. And again, I understand that he's a swarm guy. He's a culture guy. He's a local guy. He's a very, very easy to like guy that does all the right things. But that doesn't translate from a financial perspective, making him the highest paid nickel in the league. And it certainly doesn't translate spending $13 a year when we don't even know on the open market if that's something that he would command, let alone be offered, because general managers are smart enough to know, as good as he is hitting, those question marks are very evident on tape.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Caserio thought he'd be worth more on the open market, because otherwise, why would you do this deal now? He still had a year of team control before you're forced into decision. I don't know. I mean, to me, he's a guy, and this goes back to part of our conversation in the first hour, but in a salary cap league like the NFL, unlike, you know, Major League Baseball, you have to make decisions on a guy. Like, we're not going to pay guys above, you know, below this level of talent. We got to make sure we have money for Stroud, for Stingley, for Will Anderson Jr., for Nico Collins. Like, you have to save the money for your most premier talent. Everyone else, you got to look to replace with younger, cheaper guys through the draft. And Jalen Petrie, as a nickel corner who's deficient in man coverage, to me, doesn't meet the threshold of somebody that we must take care of to the tune of top of the market value. So I just thought it was, I think it's poor roster construction from Nick Caserio. And he's had so many hits. I mean, obviously, this is not a knock on his overall GM tenure. He still has way more hits than misses. But I thought that, to me, this is kind of paying a guy more for his off-the-field, you know, his leadership attributes, his off-the-field mentality, than it is production on the field. It's a fundamental disagreement that I have with Caserio's move here.
And I think when you look at it, Brian, it doesn't mean necessarily that you close the door on a guy that obviously likes it here, wants to be here, he's from here, and that they like. But before you go and make this bodacious offer to give him what they gave him, you kind of let it play out. And you realize, hey, let him. It's like in the NBA, we've seen this with multiple guys with the Rockets over the years too, where let them test the market, see what they're worth, and have the conversation with them. Hey, we're really interested in bringing you back. We have a fundamental disagreement on kind of what that number is right now. Go out and see what you can get on the open market, and we'll come back and talk about it. And then at the end of the day, you have a decision to make with a lot more data in terms of what the other, you know, rest of the league feels like he's worth, and then what you feel like you're willing to pay, and you go from there. But before he even tests the market, to just, I guess, assume that he has a high value and say he's going to make that much money, I think that, again, I'm with you. We're very supportive of Nick Caserio, but in this scenario, I'm like, I think that you jump too quick.
Yeah, first off, before I get into my response, I want to commend you for using the word bodacious. That was amazing.
You're welcome.
But, like, I think it makes sense to jump the market when it's for guys like Stingley, guys like eventually Will Anderson Jr., obviously Stroud, like they did for Nico Collins, because if you jump the market, then you might be able to get them at a lower price than if you play it out, and then obviously the salary cap goes up each year, you got new contracts to set the market higher and higher. So I think it makes sense to jump the market for those guys, those elite guys, the Nikos, the Stingleys, the Will Andersons, all those guys. But Petrie's just not in that class. So I look, if you let him get to market, maybe it means he gets overpaid and that move cost you having him on the roster. But for guys below a certain threshold on your team, guys that are in that middle tier to below, I'm willing to live with that result. And if he walks because, you know, let's say the Saints overpay him. Okay, all right. Well, I got extra picks in the Tunsil trade. We drafted Jalen Petrie in the third round before. Go out and spend a second or a third round pick on someone you could play nickel corner, even outside corner, because I still think Kamari Lassiter would make a lot of sense as your nickel corner, at least in some packages. So I don't like it because I think they overpaid relative to his level of production, and it also costs you some flexibility because, I mean, you're pretty much locking in that Lassiter now has to play on the outside. Petrie has to play at nickel corner. He can't play safety. Where if you let him walk to market, I mean, maybe you get a better deal if he does stay here, or at least you open up some flexibility with the option of maybe moving Lassiter inside.
Yeah, and Mustang Boy says Petrie's like A.J. Bouye back in the day. He's a run stuffer in the secondary. Again, that's all true, but that's not worthy of the highest paid at his position in the NFL. It's just not. And I think that there was a million different ways you could try to work this out, and you're right. You can move on because we know the CJ deal is coming. We know at a certain point you're going to be in a very tight predicament in terms of trying to make sure that all the money makes sense for everybody, maintaining everybody you need to keep on this roster and have the best team possible. And it's going to get challenging. And whether you are complete misfits at handling, you know, financials like the Saints have been for years, or you just realize it's a good thing to have all the good players they have, but you can't pay them all, to your point, that you've got to, I just think that there was a better deal to be done with Jalen Petrie than the one that got done. Not that he's not an asset that's fun to have around and he's a good player. He's just not a great player to be worthy of $13 million a year for the next 3 years.
Yeah, and that's important to mention once you said it there at the end. I'm like, I still like him as a player. I still think he's a good player. He's a benefit to the team. I just think they overpaid, you know, relative to his production. And, yeah, I mean, like you mentioned with, you know, with C.J. Stroud, like, I mean, it's a salary cap legal. I mean, it's worth repeating because they're kind of feels like they're headed into kind of a Stars and Scrubs, you know, a philosophy kind of to borrow something from DFS where they're – I mean, they're paying so many guys. They've already paid Nico. They've already paid Stingley. You mentioned Stroud. Will Anderson's coming up soon. Like, you have, if you're going to afford all those guys and still be able to fit guys around them each year when the roster turns over, I mean, you're going to have to pick your battles with guys that you view as key, you know, key guys, cornerstone guys, core guys, and guys that are a little bit more replaceable. And, I mean, obviously, Caserio disagrees, but to me, Petrie falls into the replaceable side of things.
Let us know where you are on this. Let us know what you feel. Look, we know he's a hometown kid. We know he's a good guy. But how do you feel about the deal? Was it worth it? Did it make sense to you? What are your thoughts? 713-780-3776. You can call, text, hit us up on social media. Nick Caserio had a lot to say about this today. We can review some of those quotes from Nick after the signing was announced. Before we get to the break, though, I do want to talk about my good friend Doc Linville. He is a game changer. Whether you believe Petrie is or not, I really know that Doc Linville is because he has changed the game for so many people in the Houston area. He does Botox, he does plastic surgery, and he does so much more like spot treatments. But the one thing that I have personal experience on that he's so, so good at is the NeoGraft procedure and getting your hair back. Whether you're looking to just fertilize and kind of replenish the hair that you already still have on your head that's maybe gotten a little thinner, that's PRP treatments. Those can be done right there in his office, and so can the NeoGraft. I've had experience with both. The NeoGraft is literally getting your hair back. As he's almost like replanting the sod in your yard to kind of get you more coverage area. You're never going to lose the hair on the sides in the back of your head. That's a pro tip that comes in the consultation that I had. So he takes some of that and repurposes it to where you need it most. Maybe it's that baboon's butt that's showing up and shining on the top of your head. Maybe it's the fact that your forehead has become an 8-head and you need a better hairline. Either way, and in all the places where you're losing your hair, he's going to take care of you. And it's a simple process. He'll explain it all to you for free. That's right, I said for free. Consultations for people that aren't listening to me right now are $150. You get one for free if you go to 975hair.com and sign up for a free consultation. They'll explain to you the NeoGraft and PRP treatments, show you pictures of people like me, the befores and the afters, and let you understand all the things that go into it and what you get out of it, which is your hair back, and then let you make the decision. No signing on the dotted line, no commitment to be made. Just you in a Q&A with the good people at Doc's office. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at St. Arnold Brewing Company.
Boy, lots of feedback. And funny, the ones I'm reading all seem to be directly correlated to crushing Brian and saying that we were right.
I'm sensing some bias here.
That's like saying the lyrics from the song Stan are the same from Eminem and Dido. So I guess Brian, because of that technicality, is right on this one. No. Let's see. What else we got here? Plagiarism is real. Are you wearing that one? It sounds like.
I don't know how plagiarism would be involved in the conversation.
I don't either, but I'm looking for the correlation, and I consider it a definite loss for you. It says blank hates nickel corners, kids, and puppies. Okay, sir, that's not
true. You do hate kids.
No, that's not true.
That's well established.
That's a bad stereotype that's been created between 3 to 6 here on this station. Could Caserio be anticipating more cap increases? That makes Petrie's money less of a cap hit in the future? How does that – I mean if the cap goes up, you still have to pay CJ.
Well, I mean the cap will go up, but it doesn't change that you paid him top of the market for his position. It doesn't change that. I mean, and again, like you said, you're still going to have other – I don't think it plays that big because it goes up the same for every team. It's not like it's an extra advantage for the Texans.
Is it possible – 8755 says, is it possible Will and Stroud are talking to Nick and they're going to let him know they're going to take team-friendly deals? Regardless, I feel like Nick overpaid in this deal. I don't think that CJ and Will are doing team-friendly deals. I could be wrong. But I think everybody's out to get theirs at the end of the day.
Yeah, I could see CJ more so than Will taking the team-friendly deal. I mean, just because he's seen guys like Brady and Mahomes do it. But even a team-friendly deal for CJ is still, what, $57, $58 million per year? I mean, that's the team-friendly side because we've seen guys – I think Dak got up to $60. So we'll see what happens between now and what CJ signs. So even a team-friendly deal – would be like not surpassing Dak, and that's still going to be $57-58 million minimum.
Yeah, but let's also keep in mind that when Brady was given team friendly deals, it was after he had already signed a big deal,
right?
That he had made a lot of money, and that as he wanted to continue the success of winning, that he was willing to do those kind of things. So I don't think on your first opportunity to make as much money as you possibly can and get a big deal, I don't think this is the deal where he says I'll take less.
I don't either. But I could see it happening. But, I mean, again, I don't – like, even if he takes the team-friendly deal, I just don't see it as being that much of a savings to where it then makes this room for Jalen Petrie. It makes this kind of a non-talking point because even a team-friendly deal for C.J. Stroud is going to be $58, $59 million per year. So, I mean, even a team-friendly deal is still going to take up so much cap room that any deal like this is still going to play in because I think that's part of it. Like we're talking about kind of small percentages, but they all add up. Like, I mean, okay, maybe you only paid Jalen Petrie a little bit over what you should have paid him, whatever that number would have been, but that all adds up, and that room could all go to other guys like Will and to CJ Stroud. So it doesn't make sense to pay Jalen Petrie top of the market value before you know where you're going to have to pay CJ and Will.
Richard says Jalen signing was not worth it. He could easily have been replaced in the draft. You never know until you know in terms of what you can get out of the draft. But you could definitely – I mean, look, we're talking about Lasser as a guy that was drafted as a corner that, on the outside that could be moved inside. He was drafted as a safety. He could be moved inside. Yeah, I think that you had the opportunity and a year to play with and a draft coming up where you could take one or two defensive backs somewhere throughout the draft to see if you can't find a guy. And there's always a guy in free agency – especially, I mentioned it earlier in the show, whether it's a corner that could be transitioned later in his career to a guy that, that's looking to get on a bit in a better situation or a winning team that where you could find a veteran as well. So I don't understand the timing, and I certainly don't understand the amount of money that it took to get that, and I don't think that's what it took that Nick decided to pay him.
Yeah, and getting to that point you and the texters made, I think it's a good one, because what have we given Nick Caserio the most credit for? It's been his ability to find defensive backs and wide receivers in the draft, right? Like Jalen Petrie was a third-round pick. Kamari Lassiter was a second-round pick. Obviously, everyone killed, taking Stingley over Sauce originally. But he's been right on virtually
Bullock.
All of his picks.
They got Bullock right, it seems.
Yeah, they got Bullock. And again, third round. So that kind of paints the picture of what the texter was talking about. Like, because I think people will – refute us with like, well, if you let Petrie walk, now you have a hole there. But I mean, with Petrie, with Bullock, with Kamari Lassiter, I mean, Nick Caserio has shown three examples right there of his ability to find, key players, starters, plus players in the second and third round. So the answer would be, okay, you don't pay a guy top of the market because you have a GM who's shown he can replace, that guy and find quality defensive back starters in the second and third round. Like if Caserio had the weak spot for defensive back that he seems to have for offensive lineman in the draft, then I guess I could come to that side of it. Like, well, we know he doesn't draft well, so let's take the hit that he's already made. But he's shown he can replace this guy, so why pay someone who can't do half his job, that being man coverage, top of the market value, when you know you can replace him?
Yeah, look, Caserio was asked a little while back on Pain and Pendergrass on the Highway to Hell about re-signing Jalen Petrie. And Nick's quote is interesting, especially now knowing what we know. He said, and I quote, "Always open-minded to having a dialogue with a player and their representatives and trying to figure out an agreement that everybody feels comfortable with, because the goal is for both entities and both parties to be happy on how it went. You don't want to have, we're not trying to win a negotiation. We don't believe in that. It's not how we operate. You want something where the organization wins and the player feels valued and they feel like you made them a priority." When you make them the highest paid player at their position, I think, yeah, all those boxes checked, but that's why we have reason to question why you did what you did and when you did what you did.
Yeah, doesn't that kind of fit with what we've seen recently? I mean, Jalen Petrie gets the most money for a nickel corner. I mean, we all support the Stingley deal, but that was the most money for a corner. We've seen him pay, I supported it, but that was also kind of a stretch, you know, after he'd only had 1 year of production. We've seen Caserio be willing to pay guys at the top of the market. Now, for the elite of the elite, which I think Nico Collins falls into, which Stingley falls into, that's one thing. But it does kind of paint the picture to me as something that's a little bit worrisome, that he seems to be a GM, and the quote that you just read kind of backs it up, that, I mean, he's willing to, I guess, in a way, be kind of a soft negotiator to let a player win. And, I mean, I get the mindset of, like, we need the guys happy. We want to reward the guys that, you know, fit our culture, who are doing everything we ask them to do, or, you know, putting their bodies in line. We want to reward that, and I get that. Keep the locker room happy, keep guys happy, but you're also in charge of managing the cap, and sometimes you got to make some tough decisions, and it seems like he's letting these guys maybe have some wins they shouldn't have.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Brian, and I think that at a certain point, like, you're going to have to pay the guys that you have to pay that are worth it. You mentioned some of them. They've tried to do this, but D'Amico's out there saying the same things Nick's saying. This is not just Nick. This is both of these guys saying, we're going to reward swarmers. We're going to reward guys that play our way, that you know, go about the business the way they do it. But at a certain point, you can't reward everybody, and probably your two biggest coming down the pike are the two guys that you drafted and traded to draft side by side. CJ and Will are going to cost you a boatload of money, and you have got to be very well prepared to be able to handle that. And no matter how you stack and tier these things, I just don't know how they're going to be able to pull that off without having to let some good players go.
Yeah, I don't either. And we have a caller, Vera, on the line who wants to talk about Jalen Petrie. Vera, how you doing, sir?
Hey, guys. Appreciate it, as always, for letting me chime in. What I just wanted to ask you this is, what is his guaranteed money? And since you brought up the conversation of paying CJ and Will Anderson Jr., I think they will obviously get paid. But where I think that money is going to shift from is, we got, for only two more years, right? Daniel Hunter for two more years, this year and the next year. So I suspect basically Daniel Hunter money in 2 years is going to go to Will Anderson Jr. I also see this is as a big churn of the offensive line. I mean, Tunsil was already gone because they figured they had to pay other guys, and that went to Stingley. But I also suspect after this year, Titus would be gone, and so that's going to be a complete churn in the offensive line. So I think that's where the money comes. I think it was very clear that Stingley was going to get paid. I think what I had heard from somebody who used to work at the show said, you know, they want to pay, but they're not 100% sure if they'll be able to get a deal with Petrie. They were unable to get it. But I think it's all a question of just moving the money around, right? I mean, you make some guaranteed money and up front and make the guy a little happy, so the cap hit would be, you know, easier in the later half of the year, contract or whatever. But I suspect the Daniel Hunter money in 2 years will go to Will Anderson, and then they'll, of course, have to, you know, between the churn on the offensive line and then cutting with some other key players. I mean, Aziz Alshire and all those guys will be gone in a couple of years. So I suspect that's where they're going to create the cap space for CJ Stroud. Kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Go ahead, Brian. It was hard for me to hear all of that, so I'll let you take the first crack at it.
So Vera's main point, I think I agree with, that, you know, you're going to have a lot of guys, you know, because Serio signs a lot of two-year deals, three-year deals, so there's going to be some roster turnover that creates room for, you know, guys coming up on new deals like we talked about with Stroud and with Will Anderson Jr., but kind of the main player he was referring to was Daniel Hunter, in that the money that you would pay Will Anderson will be made available because the Neil Hunter will come off the contract, off the books, which, I mean, it could be possible. I guess it depends on when you pay.
He signed an extension in the last couple weeks.
Right. So I pulled up the Neil Hunter's Spotrac page, and he's under contract for this current season and the next season. And, look, this will be year three for Will Anderson. I think he's going to want a deal after the season's over. Maybe the Texans can hold him off and convince him to wait after his fourth season. I mean, it's possible. But if he wants a deal after year three, which I see is pretty reasonable considering how well he's played, then that would still line up with the last year in Danielle Hunter's contract. So I don't think it's a guarantee, like Vera was talking about, that Danielle Hunter dropping off the books would then make room for Will Anderson.
Yeah, it's a situation that's going to get dicey simply because of the fact that your capologists are going to have to work overtime, because you know that you can be creative for so long, but at a certain point, and we see all these teams, that's why they say it's so hard to make a Super Bowl and it's so hard to compete when you have a quarterback that's making the money that C.J. Stroud is about to start embarking on making, and then you have to try and retain. We just got done saying that their identity is defense, and you're paying heavily right now on the defensive side of the football for the defense that you have while you're on an affordable contract with your quarterback. At a certain point, when you got to pay the piper, and CJ gets his, Will's going to get his, yeah, you might be able to get out from Hunter and Autry, but you got other guys that you're going to have to replace them with. You've got other guys that their contracts are going to come up too, and that's where it becomes extremely and excessively challenging.
Yeah, and that kind of brings up another point for me. We talked about it a minute ago in another way that we feel comfortable with Caserio if had they let Petrie walk, being able to replace him because he's shown such an ability to find defensive backs in the second and third round with Cam Bullock, with Jalen Petrie himself, with Kamari Lassiter. But the other part of it is, I mean, let's factor in D'Amico Ryans as well. Like, not only has Caserio shown an ability to draft these guys, if you're willing, I know that the identity of this team is defense, swarm, hit hard, and all that. But I think we've seen D'Amico, alongside with Caserio, have an ability to coach up guys that weren't necessarily the five-star, top 10 in the draft type of players. We've seen him take veteran defensive linemen on one-year contracts, like Mario Edwards, like Derek Barnett, all these guys, Jerry Hughes in the last year of his career, and make them productive. So I don't see the necessity to necessarily pay a nickel corner who can't cover top of the market when I feel that not only Caserio has the ability to find guys like that in the second and third round, but D'Amico's shown the ability to coach him up as well.
Well, to your point, I mean, D'Amico made Fred Warner
right
in San Francisco too, right? He saw something in Fred Warner and said, I don't care how low he got drafted. I think it was like a fourth or fifth round pick at best. And he turned him into an all-pro. I mean, he did the same thing with the free safety that now just left in free agency.
Huafunga?
Yeah, Huafunga, who was playing his tail off and was drafted again in the fifth or sixth round. And so D'Amico does have an eye for talent. I think Caserio does too. But it's still going to be extremely challenging because of the fact that you don't have the money you had to play with like last offseason when you were dabbling in free agency. And even the extensions that you signed for Mixon and for Diggs and all the things you were able to do. The creativity is going to come now with Capology and the talent evaluation to be able to say, I can't let this guy go, or I need to restructure this guy and this guy to make sure that that guy doesn't get away while I'm still paying all my premier players. So this is the price you pay for success and being able to find the guys they've already found. Now, how many of these guys are you going to be able to retain when, right around the corner, you're facing probably your two biggest contracts?
Yeah, you just hope that this isn't a situation where, the three of us are a year from now, 2 years from now, are talking about, like, well, we'd like the Texans to be able to re-sign this guy, but, they're out of money because, they overpaid for Jalen Petrie. Especially since, what was it, about a month ago, a month and a half ago, when they traded Tunsil. And we were all wondering, like, okay, they've now got like $20 million in cap room, where a couple weeks before that they were over the cap. What are they creating cap for? I don't know. It feels disappointing that they traded Tunsil. In part, like, maybe this is painting an incomplete picture. But in part, they traded Tunsil to create cap room to sign a nickel corner who can't cover.
I mean, to your point, Brian, we got a text message that said, if you don't get Stroud some protection, maybe he won't resign with the Texans. I don't think it's going to be that drastic.
No, he'll get his
but
money.
I do think the point is made that exactly what you were making. Like, if you're going to get rid of three-fifths of your offensive line, and everybody's thought that the number one priority was to redo and improve your offensive line, there's no doubt that they're going to have to. They're redoing it, but have they improved it?
I mean, not as of yet. I mean, we'll see what guys like Trent Brown. I mean, I'm not high on Ed Ingram. I'm not high on Lincoln Tomlinson. Trent Brown, I heard Lance say today that people he's talked to think Trent Brown might not even make it through training camp. He might be a cut. So, I mean, we'll see. I think it's going to take a lot of work in the draft for us to say the offensive line got better. And if all we get out of the savings from Laremy Tunsil is extension for Jalen Petrie, I'm going to be pretty disappointed.
I mean, and this is something I just want to let you know that this is why you should always appreciate me more and work and enjoy working
okay.
with me. Because
all right.
This is something Jeremy Branham would never do. But we got a text message from 8755 that says, Mahomes has taken team-friendly deals, restructured. You're right, Brian. I'm thinking 52 to 58 in a deal. I could be wrong, but I think CJ will do that.
Maybe.
I just don't see that on his first deal.
No, like I wish see if I could try to find the contracts of the top guys in the league because – I mean, Dak Prescott just got $60 million. So, I think team-friendly would mean he takes less than Dak. But even if you go down to guys below that, like Jordan Love and Trevor Lawrence, as I'm trying to get these numbers pulled up. Okay, so here we go. So, yeah, Jordan Love's at $55 million. So is Trevor Lawrence. And then Tua's...
Both are overpaid.
Yeah, well, I know your feelings of Jordan
yes.
Love.
Yes,
but
you
like,
do.
Is there... Okay, let's just operate in the hypothetical that, yes, C.J. Stroud takes a team-friendly deal. You're telling me he's going to take less than Trevor Lawrence and Jordan Love and Tua?
No.
I don't think
no.
so. So that means he's over 55. Like I think to the texter's point, I could see him taking a team-friendly deal. I could see him pulling the Mahomes. But that team-friendly deal is going to be 56-plus minimum, in my opinion.
So... 409 Josh says, I think Stroud gets extended next offseason because it's going to be cheaper than pushing it off until after year four, whereas I agree with Vera, you wait on Anderson until after year four. I mean, look, from the standpoint of being the anti-Dallas Cowboys and being actually very, very responsible financially, if you know that CJ is eventually going to be that guy that gets that much money, you can save yourself some money by signing him sooner rather than later, knowing that that's coming down the road, as opposed to waiting with every guy that gets the next best contract on the market. You end up overpaying at the end of the day. It's interesting. I could see the Texans aren't going to do anything but sign C.J. Stroud.
No, he 100% will be a Texan. Yeah, like,
yeah.
I really don't have any fear of Will Anderson not being a Texan either. We might disagree on when his contract gets done or how much it gets. I think both of them will be Houston Texans. That's not really the point. The point is, when you have such high-end talent like Stroud, Anderson, Nico, Stingley, those are the guys you allot the top of the market, top of their position level contracts. You don't do it for a nickel corner who can't cover in man coverage.
1642 says, contract extensions to me are like draft picks. The future is the only way to determine their value. If they live up to the extension price, they'll wind up being a good value because of the market and the rise. Sure, I get that, but then why not wait until you get to a point where they can test the market instead of extending them before you even know what that true value might be at the time he becomes a free agent?
Yeah, I don't know. I hear the argument that, well, you know, if you let him test the market, then he could leave. But, I mean, again, not to beat a dead horse, like if Jalen Petrie leaves, okay. I mean,
big deal, right?
He's a good thumper. I like having him as a, you know, quasi linebacker in nickel coverage. I think he's valuable in run support around the line. I think he does a lot of good things for the team. But I'm not going to lose sleep and wring my hands over losing a nickel corner who can't cover if he gets a better contract on the open market. Just go find someone else. I say this as if it's so easy, but I have confidence in Nick Asterio in his ability to find defensive backs in the second and third rounds like he did with Petrie, with Bullock, and with Lassiter. So if Petrie walks, okay. I trust Asterio to go get the next one.
There you go. All right, well, we've got one segment to go on the show, and that is the car wreck of the day. We're going to get to that, so hang with us. We'll wrap it up, take you up until 6 o'clock. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
ESPN 97.5.
Uh-huh. You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me all you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Hey, our thanks to St. Arnold Brewing. What a great spot to hang out anytime and all the time in the Houston area. The Beer Garden, which is where we're at, is absolutely fantastic. You want to watch the Masters, they've got a monster TV at the end of the Beer Garden where you can watch everything. But the beer is phenomenal. They've got something for everybody. They've got IPAs and all the different beers where there's got to be a flavor that you like and something that'll tickle your taste buds. Pro tip, by the way, the root beer, which they also make here, very, very, very good. That was recommended by a guy that I know that works at the station. But anyway.
That's
right. BMAC told me. BMAC, car rack of the day. What do you got?
So a two-pack on the same thing, same topic at least. But first car wreck of the day nominee was my flubbing of setting up the case of our who said it. And who was on the right side. And the second car wreck day nominee would be for the people who still apparently don't have ears. They can't hear what you're about to hear in this clip. The clear and obvious of me not messing up the quote that I read. Get over it. Two World Series titles, get over it. The 17, the 22 rings, both.
Get over it. Two World Series titles.
Yeah.
Get over
Kiss the ring.
The 17 to 22 ring.
The kiss the ring.
Again, it's a different. It's in a different spot. I say kiss the rings at the end. I don't say it in
both
the
middle. Said it. It's a technicality, but
no,
again, in a court of law, it doesn't hold up.
The only one I read was the one that Dale said at the end. I did not read the one Sean said in the middle.
By the way, Scottie Scheffler right now is sitting on his butt on the pine straw in a bush. And I don't know what the hell's going on right now at the Masters.
I see a golf ball to his right. I guess that's where he hit it.
He was thinking about punching out, but now all of a sudden looks like he's thinking about relieving his constipation. I don't know what the hell he's doing in there.
Don't you just take a drop? Or is that not allowed at the Masters?
Yeah, you should. Yeah, absolutely. It's a safe play.
Yeah.
But, you know the Masters better than me. Look at your picks. my car wreck of the day comes from the Masters. Jose Luis Ballester, amateur from the Arizona State University. Nice job. You make the Masters. You get a lot of people to have eyes on you. You're not supposed to have people having eyes on you when instead of using a porta potty or a bathroom on the course, you decide to take a leak in Rays Creek, the historic Rays Creek at the Masters. Come on, man.
It's a little less historic now that it has this P in it. But we have the clip from said Race Creek Pier. Would you like to hear it again?
Yeah, here's what Jose had to say.
Well, I completely forgot that we had those restrooms on the left of the tee box.
Okay. 13
T. Yes, yeah. Correct. And then I'm like, I really need to pee. Didn't really know where to go. And since JT had an issue around the green, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to sneak here. In the river, probably the people would not see me that much, and then they clap for me. Probably one of the clubs that I really got today, like real loud. So that was kind of funny.
Were you concerned that there might be any blowback from that at all? Or I mean, obviously they did see you, right?
Yeah, they saw me. They saw me. I mean, it was not embarrassing at all for me. So if I had to do it again, I would do it again.
He would do it again, Joel. He would do it again.
I don't care if you're a porn star and you've got all the confidence in the world. One, yeah, they did see me. And, not that many. And
maybe that's what he's saying. Like, man, hey, look, brother, I'm packing heat. I don't care if they see me.
I was going to say, they did see me. So what? You want to see?
And
by the way,
your lady's
I'd do
too.
It again.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
If she'll like it too, like in the Frank Thomas Nugenics commercials. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, they saw me. And she'll like it too.
I mean, seriously, the way that their governing body with the Masters and Augusta, that's not. I believe that's going to be frowned upon. I'll just leave it there. But I'm sure there was a discussion had in Butler Cabin last night or wherever they got him staying.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Like, this guy better make sure he plays his way onto the tour. They can't. You can't have it to where or this Masters. He can't leave it up to where it's like. Well, maybe he's in, maybe he's not. He's certainly not going to have any favorites inside Butler's cabin.
He's 10 over right now, so he ain't
not playing
the weekend.
The next year.
And if he wants to come back He has some butt to be kissing and sent us some creeks to be. Never mind. It rhymes, kissing. But I'm not using it. Yeah. Hey, our thanks to St. Arnold Brewery once again for having us out. We always love being here. My thanks to Anthony Medina, Funky Cold, as he said his coaches called him in high school, for doing all the on-site engineering. My thanks to BMAC for double duty, Jeremy Branham and myself. Jeremy will be back Monday. We'll have a show for you then. Have a great weekend, everybody. And, hey, by the way, Brian is on the bullpen tomorrow, 12 to 2. Check him out on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Goodbye.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.